Good evening. Can everybody hear me okay? Just somebody get to say hello so we make sure we're all still connected.
Hello.
Diana, Joe. Great. Wonderful. Thank you. It's great to be with you tonight. And Dr. Jacobs, it's great to have you with us. Joe Jacobs is our sports psychologist for our new venture performance metrics with Lee Steinberg. So it's great to have you here with us tonight, and thank you for taking the time to join us.
Happy to
tonight
be here.
Great, thank you. Well, we're starting at the top tonight. We're starting with connection with people. I want you to turn to your assessments, if you would, please. I'll spend just a few moments on the measurements so we have an idea of what we're looking at. We're looking at how we value human beings. We're looking at a human being. They are priceless. They are unique. They have physical characteristics. They have beliefs. They have performance, lack of performance. They've got challenges. They've got pain, suffering, struggle. As we're looking at a human being, how clearly can we see them? How accurate are we intuitively in our assessment of where they are? These are the six measurements. So the first one is empathetic, empathy. EM in front of a word means to stand on. Path means someone's past, to stand on someone's path, to see through their eyes. That's empathy. Can we see their uniqueness and their pricelessness? The next measurement is respectful. And respectful asks, we're valuing this person, but we're focusing on their outward characteristics, their appearance, height, weight, hair color, amount of hair, talents, skills, contributions, all of those tangible, comparable, contrastable characteristics of the human being. That's respectful. Now, respectful is often, in today's world, over-focused. We put more value on outward appearance than we sometimes put on their actual intrinsic value as a human being. We are conditioned to do so. We look at movies, magazines. Everything is about appearance. It's about how people look. And so everyone is doing their very best to look their very best. And the truth is that in today's economy, in today's world, few things are as they appear. But yet we can look at someone, and if we have a challenge with our own self-esteem, we might be intimidated by how that person looks at first. Now we get to know them better, we get more comfortable, and that dry mouth and sweaty palms goes away, and we don't feel so awkward or clumsy. But we can feel really awkward and clumsy, because a little cortisol surge, just a little nervousness that shows up when we're over-focused on those outward appearances, especially if it's about things that we feel we are inadequate in, such as wealth, be the most common, or education. The other possibility is that we could create an expectation for how that person would perform based on how they look. This can be their title, their education, their wealth, their appearance. We expect certain things out of that person. And we are often sorely disappointed because people rarely perform based on appearance. Now, once we understand that and we go into the principles tonight of intrinsic validation, stepping into a person's world, we're not intimidated by the outward appearance. We actually care to get to know the person. We can get past that facade and feel more comfortable with that human being. Third measurement is accepting. Now we're looking at this human being in terms of what they believe, their opinions, their ideas. What value do these things add to the person? Can we see how that belief system can serve them or could create challenges? Are we accepting? One of the great risks with this measurement is we might see what they profess and then see how they behave and see the inconsistencies, and we could become a little judgmental. So we want to be very careful that we're examining the good in the person along with the challenges so that we can see everything in balance. Accepting. We're focused on their belief systems. Now, tolerant is an interesting measurement in that we're focused on belief systems, But it's when a belief system is harmful. We have the sergeant being tried right now, Fort Hood killings. A professed radical Muslim. One of our coaches is Muslim. And I know that she's a wonderful, God-fearing, beautiful human being. But radical Muslim who wants to kill people, can we see the risks? Now, that's a radical example. For an example, let's say someone who has a belief system that they should just be able to get whatever they need. And they come to us in need, professing they could use our help. And so we start to help them. And they really have no desire to improve. They're just taking from us until we realize that we can't give anymore. And we stop, and all of a sudden we're the bad person. I've had a client that's in a situation who can't say no to someone who asks for help. And he gives away half of his $5 million a year income in that kind of a situation until we got together. And he was always frustrated because he kept getting burned because he wasn't able to see the risks associated with service. We're not supposed to just give indiscriminately. We are to be generous and kind and unconditional. At the same time, we are to be wise. We don't try to save every underdog. That's tolerant. Just and fair. We're looking at a human being, and there's something that's taking away from their value. A thing. It could be performance. Could be appearance. Can we accurately see the appropriateness of how that is impacting that person's worth? And lastly is compassion. Passion means a willingness to suffer for something we love. Compassion, suffer with someone. Can we see their pain? Can we see the struggle that they're going through? Just take a look at your assessment and see the clarity. The vast majority of everyone on this call has very high clarity in this area. The challenge we may want to examine is take a look at the right-hand side of your assessment and say, what might get in my way? Are there issues in self-esteem that might have me thinking about me instead of using this powerful gift to connect? In terms of way I think about things, am I vividly visualizing and frustrated by how things are turning out? Am I preoccupied with what I would want to create in my own life that I might miss an opportunity to serve? The clarity here doesn't say I am good at connecting. It says I have an enormous capacity, should I choose to use it, to accurately assess in the connection of another person. So take a look at this piece. It's wonderful to see so many measurements that are clear. Now, does anyone have a question about a measurement before we go into the principles? Okay, well, I'm going to keep the line open. If anybody has anything going on in the background, just press *6 on your phone. That'll mute your individual phone. We'll keep the line clear. We have a lot of people that listen to this call during the course of the week because they can't make it on a Tuesday night. But I want to keep it open so that you can ask questions as we go along. When we look at connection, there is an overriding foundational principle, and it's called love. It's not eros, it's not erotic love, it's not mia, maternal love, it's not philo, brotherly love. It's agape. It's a heightened level of awareness. It is developing the ability to step back and see this person from a heightened level of awareness, free of bias and prejudice, and being able to see the real person, not being deluded by outward appearances or lack of performance, really truly being able to see the human being. We want to be able to start to practice agape love. Now, most of us believe that we do. This is an opportunity for us to put it to the test and to do the best that we can improve. Because so many of us, when we're listening to a person, we are listening, formulating an answer, instead of listening to understand them. And agape says, I'm curious. I want to know about this person. I'm listening. See what they say and ask them more questions about what they're saying. I want to get deeper into their life. I want to notice what's important to them and verbalize it. I want to connect with this person. This is not about me. It's about me being totally available to make it about them. Now, there are very few human beings who have actually accomplished this task. Hogg says that even, you know, when we reach that point that we can walk unencumbered among all men, our name will be raised high on the pyramid of life. Not very many people have reached that level. So for most of us, it takes consciousness to be in this space. My mission tonight is to help raise your consciousness so that when you're with another human being, you can listen differently, hear differently, ask different kinds of questions. So I'm going to give you the pieces. There are three principles, and then there is a process called intrinsic validation. Three pieces. First piece is agape. And agape has three components. Agape love says that I will look upon everything differently, and I'll be born again. When Og says that love is the greatest secret of success in all ventures, and he tells us that we can melt all hearts like in the sun whose rays soften the coldest clay, and he tells us that my reasoning they may counter, my speech they may distrust, my apparel they may disapprove, my face they may reject, and even my bargains may cause some suspicion. Yet my love, my agape love, will melt all hearts like into the sun whose rays soften the coldest clay. And I love his next question. And how will I do this? How will I do this? Where do I get this agape love? Where does it come from? And he has buried in this scroll. Now keep in mind, he wrote all the scrolls in one night. This is the only one Betty made him rewrite because it was very complicated. He was talking about the concepts we're talking about. She made him water it down. Everything's still here, except for instead of having an intellectual knowledge of it, this scroll requires that we actually live it. When we live it, we get it. And all of you have lived this paragraph. Now let's see if we can get it. How will I do this? Henceforth, I will look on all things with love, and I'll be born again with love, with a heightened level of awareness. Everything I face, every challenge I face. Then he says, I will love the sun, for it warms my bones. Think about an experience that's tantamount to the sun warming our bones. And I think about the birth of our children. He says, yet I love the rain, for it cleanses my spirit. I think of the 10 years of paying back $1 million in debt. It was just constantly pouring this pressure. I will love the light, for it shows me the way. Get this inspired idea, this spiritual moment, this awakening. I'll love the darkness, for it shows me the stars. Now, mythologically, the stars were diamonds. So Og is saying, something like an experience comes along that blocks the sunlight of success. It's very dark. But in that darkness, we can finally see the diamonds in our life, those things that are most important. I wrote in the book about driving away from our dream home, having lost all of everything financially, and seeing my wife with seven kids in the van singing camp songs. And I'm bawling because we're driving away from our dream home. The darkness of that moment helped me see what was really important. Really important. So sometimes that darkness really serves us well. I will welcome happiness, for it enlarges my heart. Think about times that you've just been excited about something that's happened. Yet I will endure sadness, for it opens my soul. This is the recent loss of a friend to cancer. I will acknowledge my rewards, for they are my due. We might get a promotion or recognition. Yet I will welcome. I struggled with that word for a few years. Welcome obstacles, for they are my challenge. Welcome obstacles. When we're practicing agape love, the very first thing we do is welcome these obstacles, these things that cleanse our soul and help us see the stars and open our hearts. These moments, we look at them and we welcome them, because the alternative is not being void of challenge. It's not I welcome them or I don't have challenges. We all get the challenges. So I either welcome them, learn from them, or I spend my time in resistance and resentment because of them. Those are our two options. So if we welcome them, we learn from them, and we show up in them in a way that it inspires another person. So one is I welcome and learn from it. That's one. Second, agape love is I show up in it in a way that it inspires other people who are struggling to take on their struggles with more courage. And third, I use what I've learned to bless the lives of another person. We live in a world where people want an easy button. Push it. No more stress, no more pain, no more frustration. Which means they're setting themselves up for a lot of discouragement and frustration. Because life is filled with challenges, filled with these opportunities to stretch and grow and become all that we're meant to be. Perfectly designed for us. So that's agape, first principle. Second principle, walls of resistance. Everybody has one. I learned a great lesson 2 weeks ago when I spoke in California. I mentioned it briefly last week about introversion, extroversion. That when introverts are in meetings with like-minded people, they can act like an extrovert and be okay. However, when they leave that like-minded environment, come back out to the world, they can feel really uncomfortable. And I know a number of you are involved in network marketing companies, and 80% to 90% are introverted. And a lot of people have looked at it as a weakness. I'm introverted, that's a weakness, something I've been trying to change in my life. We go to a meeting with other network marketers and we feel so comfortable with like-minded people that we all of a sudden can do things with ease, carry on conversations, connect with people. Then we come home and we feel like we're failing, we're broken, something's wrong with us. And then when we go to try to talk to someone, we have a tendency to throw up on them. Blah, blah, blah. Splashes back. We project, reject. Tastes awful. Or we end up in strategic conversations where we try to pretend like we're there for one reason, but we really have an agenda to get to another reason. And that really feels icky. And we have high levels of empathy and intuition. Our intuition knows that we're violating someone's space, that we're being duplicitous, double-minded, trying to pretend one thing when we really want to accomplish something else. We are violating our own truth and that person's space. Now we know. The introvert gets to own their gift, their strength. They're not extroverted. They're not out there wild and crazy. They're very solemn. And they are great observers, listeners, and capable of asking empathetic questions, all at a very high level, very powerful. So as we look at this wall, an introvert can actually take a wall down faster than an extrovert, because an extrovert is going to be tempted to use a sledgehammer, to just blast through it. An introvert who's trying to act like an extrovert is going to throw up on the wall and be strategic in their conversation, because they're not comfortable enough just to blast through it. And should they try to blast through it, it's really awkward and uncomfortable. But here's the introvert looking at this wall. I take the extrovert and I want to bring them down so they'll more patiently listen. That's painful. Just want to talk and fix and make it happen. The introvert, it's very easy to say, you're already observing. Just become the observer. Because everybody has a wall. Dr. Robert S. Hartman, University of Tennessee, measured that on average, in a non-adversarial relationship, that's two friends, that's companions, husband and wife, non-adversarial relationship, even then, a person holds back 40%, on average, 40% of their cooperation and productivity until they feel valued and understood. It's all being dammed back, held back. And when we know how to take down these walls, that cooperation and productivity floods out to us. We're the beneficiaries. So everybody's got a wall of resistance. And we do not want to talk to someone about a difficult issue until their wall is down. So all we'll do is throw up on the wall. Third, we take down the wall with empathy and intuition. Empathy comes from our life experiences. We know how we're going to handle them now, but we've got a lot of them. We've got some new folks on the line tonight, so I'm going to share a little bit around the Chicago Dream. Many of you have heard me speak about this from stage, or we've talked about in our coaching sessions. I learned some new things this week about that dream. I want to share them with you. In the dream, I'm walking down a path, and I'm dragging a big white muslin sack. It's draped over my right shoulder, and it's dragging on the ground. It weighs probably 200 or 300 pounds. It's taking all of my energy just to drag it along. A man is approaching me, and I want to connect with him, but I feel exhausted. And this tender voice says, "Let go of the sack." You just do this with me. Just feel it with me. Take your hands as if you're holding something over your right shoulder. I'm actually doing that right now. This is instinctual. Let go of the sack. Sit up in your chair or stand up. Just feel the relief. Then I was told to turn around and face the sack. I didn't want to look at the sack because I knew what was in the sack. It was all of my failures, frustrations, things that had been done to me, things I'd done to other people. It was everything I didn't want to see it. There was a reason why I was dragging it behind me so I didn't see it. It was part of my life. I didn't let it go. But it was behind me. Then I was told to empty the sack. When I did, on the floor was a stack of silver orbs with sharp spikes on them. I have not understood that metaphor until this week. This dream was years and years ago. They look dangerous. They look like they could hurt a person. That's how they look when we first see them. The spikes have that meaning to us. They're difficult to hold because of the spikes without getting pricked by one of the sharp edges. We take the spikes and we hold them in your hands. Now, spikes held in a person's hands could have another meaning for someone else, perhaps a Christian. That could have a whole other meaning. But I was asked to pick up the most painful of them all and hold it in my hands. I'm going to ask each one of you tonight to reflect on the most painful experience in your life. So I'm holding mine, I'm looking at it. And those of you who know this or read it in the book, you know I was age 3 to 5, I'm in the care and keeping of a pedophile. My father's going to school, working at night, my mother's working. This young couple, not that young, but middle-aged couple, who couldn't have children, were so excited to take care of my sister and me. That was not a pleasant experience. And then I was asked the most interesting question. And I'll ask you the same question tonight. Just hold that experience in your hand for a moment. Look at it. Has anyone else suffered from a similar wound? I remember saying, yeah, well, yes, of course. Then engrave this on your heart. I remember the spikes. It looks kind of scary. However, when I placed it against my chest and pressed it, it slid in without any pain. I felt a sense of ownership and wholeness. Now, in this decision to take it out of the sack, hold it in our hands, and then engrave it on our hearts, there's one more element that's occurring. We often use our past experiences as excuses for why we're not succeeding, why we're not successful financially in relationships. Well, it's because of this or because of that. When we're doing this, making this choice, what we're saying is, I will no longer use this as a reason, as an excuse. I'm going to stop using it as a burden to me, an excuse for what I'm doing, something that's painful, something for which I may feel guilt or shame or resentment or anger. I let all that go. And I'm going to engrave it in my heart. And I'll tell you more about that in a moment. I start to turn around and pick up the next piece. Anyone else suffering from a similar wound? I had some major one of these. Graved it on my heart. Yes, of course. Next one. Anyone else suffering from a similar wound? Well, yes, of course. Grave it on your heart. Soon, they were all gone. They were all in my heart. And it was swelling to handle the load. It was freeing to not have to drag them around anymore. The weight, the heaviness was gone. And then I heard the voice say to me this, David, and speak your first name, your character has been forged in the furnace of adversity. You know what pain feels like. You cannot take back the past. However, you can choose to use it as a rich resource to better understand what someone else is going through. If you'll choose to use it this way, there will finally be purpose in that suffering, joy in the journey, and much-needed healing in your soul. Then I was told to turn around. I turned around. And there's the man standing in front of me. And for the first time, I noticed he, too, was dragging a sack. I could not see his until I owned mine. Now, I must tell you that I think the sack is empty, and I keep finding new stuff in it. So it's a journey. But we want to get the most burdensome, uncomfortable things out of the sack. Knowing this, that if it's impossible to empty it and look at it, it's just so emotionally overwhelming, you will want to get the services of a therapist to help you process through that traumatic event, whatever it was. Coaching is when we're saying, I want to move past this. I don't want to hang on to this anymore. I don't want to use it as a reason for why I'm not succeeding. I don't want to keep this resentment alive or this anger or this guilt or this shame. I'd like to use this experience engraved in my heart to better understand what someone else is experiencing. So spend some time this week and see what you might still have in your sack. What is it you haven't wanted to look at, and what's it costing you? And how is it robbing you and everyone around you of all of these incredible intuitive abilities? Because they are most powerful in their use when we have owned our experiences and now we're showing up to listen to another human being. Now, I use empathy and intuition as two tools. Empathy, empathy, standing on someone's path. Intuition, that inner sense, that gut feeling. We have cleaned the filters out because we no longer have bias or prejudice, so we can trust the intuitive impressions that come, and we can follow them as if they're urgent assignments. So those are the principles on which we're going to connect. Agape love, this heightened level of awareness. Everyone's got a wall of resistance, and we will want to take the wall down so that we can connect and communicate. And three, empathy and intuition are the tools that we use to actually take down the wall. Any questions about that before we go into the process of intrinsic validation? Okay, pull out your pencil because here we go. It's so important that we do not try to be mechanical in the execution of these principles. I'm going to give them to you very simply tonight, only four steps. So we keep it very simple. Step number one is we are going to start noticing people. We're going to start noticing people. And we probably notice more than we verbalize. And when we start to verbalize what we notice, we can start to feel uncomfortable, especially if you're an introverted person. Gosh, I feel like, am I faking this? Am I being phony? Am I manipulating them? And just trust that now you're finally noticing. That's what this is, awareness. You're finally being aware of things you may not have ever seen before and certainly have not verbalized. So we're going to practice this week noticing what's important to other people and verbalizing it. If in your assessment, the third measurement down, accepting, is orange, I also want you to practice the game of red flags, green flags. A red flag is something that's wrong, something someone has done that's wrong. A green flag is something that's good. And when we're with people this week, every time we see a red flag, we're going to bite our tongue and we're going to look for a green one. And the only thing we're going to say to anyone for the next week are those things that are good, those things that are important to that human being. If we have children, they clean their room and they got a sock left out, you don't mention the sock. They didn't make their bed perfectly, you don't mention that. You say, you're doing so much better. This looks wonderful. We're going to notice the good part. Not the strip of grass they missed if they mowed the lawn, but the lawn they did mow. The car they did wash and not the one-inch square they missed. You know, whatever it might be. If we have employees or coworkers, we're going to notice what they do that's good for a week. Play red flags, green flags. It's very healthy. But that's the first thing. We're just going to start noticing. Principle two, or process two, excuse me, is we're going to start listening. Listening for doors. This is a shift from just noticing a human being to actually caring. Agape love, you'll notice, can't be faked. We can't play like we love people. We actually do love them. And we go from noticing, that gets us focused on them versus us, gets us outwardly focused. And now we're going to start to listen for doors. I want you to picture someone standing behind a rock wall, big oak door hanging on iron hinges, and you're going to listen for a door to open and a verbal hint. Door opens. Oh, I've had a really rough day. Now, all of you have been practicing this. We don't respond, me too. Remember, we say, tell me more about that. Share with me what you're thinking. It's like we're stepping into their world. We're stepping into their world. When we listen, I mentioned earlier that we often listen to respond. We're going to listen to understand. One of the techniques we want to practice is that we're listening to someone. I just leaned in my chair as if I'm listening to someone sitting in the chair across from me here, and they're talking to me. And when they finish talking, I count 1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1,000. They might say, well, what are you doing? I'm just listening.
Hi, Mom.
I'm just listening. So we want to be able to listen without giving advice or fixing or judging. The gift we give to another human being is not the advice we have. It's them feeling understood. And that process begins by being safe. And we are safe because we're listening without responding. Anybody want to smile on the phone? This is hard to do at first. Now, for an introvert, it's a little easier because we're generally a little bit more quiet. But our mind's going a million miles an hour, so we just focus in and we listen. It would be wise to carry, as I do, a journal everywhere you go. You'll never see me outside the house without my journal and a pen. And if I'm talking to someone, I'm writing down doors as they open. I had a conversation this afternoon for 45 minutes. And I've got pages and pages of little doors that opened. So this person got done talking, telling the story. So you mentioned a few minutes this. Could you tell me a little bit more about that? We're stepping deeper into their world as we listen. We're listening for doors, verbal hints. Now, occasionally, we'll want to knock on someone's door. We ask a question like, how do you feel about a home-based business? Or have you ever thought about going into a graduate program at the university? Yeah, so what have you been thinking about? Tell me more about that. That's a gentle door knock. The door opens, they comment, and we step right into their comment. And just know, and in my book there's a whole section on this in connection. If I remember, it's like page 10-something. Let me find out. I'll give it to you right now. One of the great risks is that we want to cut things short. It's page 107. Today I begin a new life, the dangerous landmines. Just know that as we're practicing this listening and stepping into someone's world, that some of the comments they'll make will be sarcastic or caustic or hurtful, even rhetorical comments. And we can take everything personally if we choose to, or we can choose not to take any of it personally. Well, share with me what your experience is like. What causes you to feel like that? Help me understand. We can prematurely tell our stories. I was recently at an event with Ramona and with like five other couples. And there were three or four of them that were dominating the conversation. And when there was a break, I started to tell a story. I only got a sentence out, and somebody jumped in. Yeah, I did that once too, and off they went on their story. Totally oblivious to the fact that they are never listening, ever listening. It's really kind of sad. Don't be one of those people. Let someone finish their story. If we have been there, we've done something similar, we'll know the questions to ask, which we'll talk about in just a moment. Shortcuts. We're tempted to say, I know how you feel. That's a shortcut. We're selling ourselves out. If we know how they feel, we'll know the question to ask that will demonstrate that we know how they feel. Missing the target with our questions sometimes when we're stepping into someone's world and we move from listening to the third process, which is asking empathetic questions and creating a safe place. Someone might say, oh man, I just it's been horrible. I lost a big commission. And maybe we've been there before. So are you losing any sleep? Because that's what we experienced. That's what our empathy says. Gosh, I wonder if he's losing sleep. Are you losing any sleep? They say, no, I'm not losing any sleep. Sometimes we go, my empathy's not working. And instead we say, well, how's it working for you? What happens to you? And they say, I just get really nervous and anxious and I get a fever. You know there was something. What happens to you may not be exact, but the empathetic question, do you ever lose sleep, is really closer than you thought it was. So missing the target and empathetic question, just simply say, well, how does that work for you? The dreadful brain freeze. This happens all the time when we're listening and we're not used to listening, writing down the doors and then asking these empathetic questions. We get a brain freeze like, what would Dave say? I don't know what to do. and we lose our concentration. And at that point in time, we just say, I'm just listening. I'm just listening. It takes too long. I hear this all the time. Oh, it takes too long to listen and do this. I just want to get to the problem and fix it. When we realize that the healing comes in the understanding, that the valuation of the person comes in the understanding, the walls coming down come in the understanding. It doesn't come in the advice. It doesn't come in the fixing them. People don't want advice. They don't want to be fixed most of the time unless they're asking for it. This is the gift we give, this gift of being in this moment with them. And lastly, the too broad of a context. Sometimes we'll sit down with someone and we'll say, well, how's your life? And an hour and a half into lunch, we wanted to talk to them about something we're doing, and we dropped a lead balloon. Well, the reason why I brought you here to lunch was, and we have that really awkward segue into what we really want to talk about. If we're in long conversations and we're not getting to the point, we want to narrow the context. I mentioned a few moments ago, home-based business. If you're selling nutritionals, share with me the kind of nutritional supplementation that you take. Or do you buy nutritionals supplementation? That would be a great question. Another one might be, what brand do you use? It gives us an opportunity to narrow the context. You say, well, I use this brand. Oh, tell me more about it. And we're right in their world, but on the topic that we would like to address. That's what it means to narrow a context. We're not manipulating them. We're just choosing to have the conversation in a narrow bandwidth. It allows us to explore the kinds of things we would like to know, because as we ask empathetic questions, right down those doors, step into their world, ask empathetic questions, trust begins to build. And you know it's building because there's no longer a need for a wall. That's what brings down a wall of resistance, is feeling safe. So we show up safe by listening. We create a safe place by asking empathetic questions that validate that we are listening. Well, let me share with you to see if I heard that correctly. This, 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 and this. Is there anything else more about this you'd like to share? That's how we listen. Now there's a safe place and the walls come down. When the walls are down, we have already given the gift. We don't need to fix them. We don't need to give them advice. We gave them the gift, the greatest gift we can give another human being, which is feeling
understood. Into the phone and doing things.
It's feeling understood. That's the gift that we give.
Now,
in that
you.
Moment, oops, we got a conversation going on.
I did.
If you could press star 6 on
yes.
your phone, please.
Listening in on the phone. And I'm just doing some things. I just sewed a button on your pajamas that were missing a button.
Hello, we got a conversation
yeah.
about buttons on pajamas. Can you hear me?
Sorry.
Just press star 6 on your phone. It's okay. Just press star 6, and you can carry on that conversation. So the gift we gift is the gift of understanding. Now they feel understood. We could very literally shake hands and say, thank you so much for sharing. Thank you so much for listening. If we're in a business where we want to sell something, by stepping into their world, we just learned all kinds of things about them, and if we narrowed the context about the very topic we're interested in, we may have discovered there's a real need. And when there is a need, and we have a solution, we're at a moment of decision. That decision is this the right time? Will this bring value to their life? It is, we move to the fourth step in intrinsic validation, as I'm describing them as four steps tonight. It's called inviting. We invite them into our world. I want you to see the visual. Just feel this visual. I'm sitting in their world. They've shared with me things for which I have solutions. And I say to them, you've shared with me this and this. I've got some ideas of how to address that. Would you be interested in hearing them? If they say yes, metaphorically, we take them by the arm, walk out of their world, pick up our agenda. We left it out there on the front porch. We pick up our agenda, walk them across the bridge that we built, and into our world, We open up our briefcase and we share the peace that they need to know. But we invite them to do so. When we're in that space and we're sharing, we'll often hear objections. Most people have clever answers for objections. Let's have answers to objections. Objections are rarely stated as a question that needs an answer. They're almost always stated as a comment that deserves a question. Well, I feel uncomfortable with. Oh, tell me more about that. Share with me your experience. How has that impacted you? Most objections are handled by someone being introspective about their own life. And in terms of closing, most of you are in relationship businesses. You're not in transactional businesses. Transaction is a grocery store where you got, you know, half a gallon of milk and cheese and eggs and you're out the door. They're closing the sale. Buying paint, they're going to close the sale. Buy a car, they're going to close the sale. In a relationship business, you don't close a sale, you begin a relationship. We've gone through this, I've shared these pieces with you. Are you ready to get started? We're beginning a journey with them. We're beginning a journey. Many businesses that are on this phone are in that kind of a business where you're saying, everything I've done to this point is finding out whether you have a need and I have a solution, whether you're interested in my solution. If you're interested in it, then let's get started. Let's help you get that product. Let's help you get it into your life, and let's see what it does for you. That's a beginning. So would you like to get started? How do we get started? We do this, this, and this. Okay. Last piece. This process of noticing, of listening for doors, being safe, of creating a safe place by asking empathetic questions, taking down those walls, deciding if this is an appropriate time to take it further, if that's far enough, and lastly, inviting and stepping into their world and you get an objection, is not about being soft or warm and fuzzy. It's about being accurate and clear. It's about caring about another human being enough to find out what's going on in their life, what's important to them, and then validating that with empathetic questions. It's been my experience that when we start here in anything, it goes deeper, it's richer. We're able to serve more people with more products, ideas. Not everyone. Stan McCormick says, everyone I meet becomes a friend. Some of my friends need my products, so I sell them to them. Some of my friends need my business, so I invite them to join me. Everyone's a friend. Everyone. We're going to start getting in the business of listening and creating friendships. Just know that it's not warm and fuzzy. We could be tempted, if we feel shy, to jump into this process to avoid being firm. There will be times when we want to stand up for someone, be firm and clear. There will be times when we'll run into someone who's tantamount to a rattlesnake, and we don't put them in our sleeping bag. Because if we take our feet down there, it provokes them and they bite us. Now, we're surprised, but that's what rattlesnakes do. It's about clarity, accuracy. That's intrinsic validation. So keep this simple. Don't get mechanical about it. Just take a look at, what have you got back there in that sack you're dragging around? Because it's most likely your greatest asset. If you'll take it out of the sack, engrave it on your heart, and have it as a ready reference when you're listening to someone. Dan Goldman, one of my favorite authors, wrote a book called Social Intelligence. And in that book, he reported that we are actually meant to do this. We are built to do this. The way our empathy functions, the way we penetrate what he called the skin-bone barrier, to feel what someone else is feeling, the use of mirror neurons and being able to pick up what's happening in somebody else's life, we are absolutely built to connect. However, in our society, we're becoming less and less connected. At this level, we're Facebook texting. We're not empathetically connected. where we truly are understanding what another person is experiencing. And Ed Ogg called this the greatest secret, and it's a secret for a reason. Too many focus on themselves. You have to focus on others and actually care. The greatest secret of success in all ventures. Well, I hope that is a refresher for those of you who have been through this. Let's go home this week and practice it. Your scroll for this week is scroll 2. I'll greet this day with love in my heart. My favorite little piece in that scroll when he says, silently and to myself, when I confront someone, I'll say silently to myself, I love you. And he tells us that when spoken in silence, these words will shine in my eyes and wrinkle my brow, being a smile to my lips, echo in my voice, and his heart will be opened. And who is there who will say nay to my goods when his heart feels my love? That's not just an idea. It was 1968, long before neuroscientists had figured things out. We now know that those are indicators picked up by a person's mirror neurons, mirror on the wall. They read those signals, send messages to the brain and chemicals into the body that say this person's safe. There is a physiological reaction to silently saying to someone, I love you, and showing up that focused, that aware, that conscious. Practice that this week and see what kind of miracles you could create by that single act alone. How differently you feel about people just before you walk in the office, saying to yourself, I love you, or I love all of you. We show up differently. We speak differently. There are 200 muscles in our face. 2^200 - 1. That's how many different variations there are. Billions of variations of muscles. But our thoughts leak out on our face. You cannot fake it till you make it. It's terribly naive. The law of attraction is based on a mirror neuron picking up the subtleties in facial expressions, tonality of voice, tenor, and translating that and sending signals to the brain. We're either attracted to the person or we're repulsed by the person. We want to be a person that people are attracted to. So let us this week practice silent to ourselves. I love you. Just try that one all week with everyone you meet and see what kind of miracles you create. Come back next week and let us know. Okay, any questions or thoughts before we wrap up tonight?
Dave, this is Diana.
Hi, Diana. How are you?
I'm doing great. I do have a question. Back to the part where you were talking about be careful not to tell your story too soon.
Yes.
I'm having a little difficulty with timing, I guess you could say, because not everybody is slow and laid back like me. A lot of people are really fast-paced, and I'm having a difficulty trying to connect with those kinds of people, kind of bringing myself up to their speed, up to their mind speed, you know. Do you have any thoughts on how to connect with people who are so very different than you as far as energetically?
Yes, and it's a highly developed skill. So don't be too terribly discouraged if you're uncomfortable talking to some people. You get extremely comfortable with people that are more like-minded in terms of the way they process. Practice, 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 because the practice there will prepare you for the change when you're dealing with a person at a different speed. Then you actually are conscious enough to shift the speed of your dialogue and your approach to their need. Because you're not trying to get them to show up the way you show up. You show up the way they show up. That's not acting. That's awareness at a very high level. If someone's very fast, you just jump in and talk that way. Well, tell me what's happening. What happens next? Well, tell me more about that. Okay? What do you want to do about that? Okay, I get it. I've got 3 options for you. May I share them with you? You just, because that's how they process. They quite often have a different set of walls, and their walls will go up if you show up quiet and trying to drag out of them long conversations. That just they don't have the time of day for that. So you'll want to show up in the space in which they're in. But to do that may not be your natural and comfortable way of being. So you want to get really good at intrinsic validation at the speed at which you process. You okay with that answer?
Yes. Yes, I am.
In time, you'll get more comfortable.
I guess once you internalize it, then it kind of becomes automatic for you, and you'll be able to do. I'd be able to do that, I guess.
You said it beautifully. Peter Vidmar said that when they were practicing 5 hours a day, 6 days a week for 12 years for the Olympics. He said practice makes not perfect, but permanent. It's no longer a technique, it's a way of being. We're just that way with everyone we meet. And if we need to speed up the process, that's okay. But if we're still trying to figure out the process, it's hard to speed up what we're uncomfortable doing.
And if
so
we try to fake it, then it makes, and we appear not confident in what we're saying.
Right, because if you try to speed up and it feels like you're faking it, versus just being totally aware of their need, the intention's totally different. If I'm just speeding up because that's what the person needs, I can be absolutely genuine at a faster speed, because I'm showing up for them. I love you, silently to myself. I love you. I love you enough to speed up because that's how you process. But if we're just trying to speed up, and the biggest challenge we generally have, Diane, and you know this, is we've got an agenda.
Uh-huh.
we still have an agenda that we're trying to get to. And how do we get to it with that fast? Do I skip step one, two, or three? Because we're still stuck on our agenda. When we practice this enough time, the speed, we let the agenda totally go. Well, the only agenda we have is taking down their walls so we can find out what they need. We don't have that's the agenda. We don't have an agenda to sell anything until we find out there's a need to sell it. Now we have an agenda. I'd like to share this with you. Come into my world. Let me tell you all the benefits, my story, my experience with it. Wow, this is something that could bless your life. There's an agenda. We pick it up at the door, at the door frame when we walked out of their house. We did not have it when we were in the house. But many of us want to take that agenda into the house, kind of have it sitting there just in case we need it. There is no use for having an agenda when we're in somebody else's world. We're in their world, on their time, on their topic. We don't tell our story there. We want to create the safest place. We want to be so safe and create a safe place that there's no need for a wall. Walls come down, connection occurs. Now we found out a need. Now we can invite them to come over. If they're ready, let's take them. Boy, pick up that agenda. Go over into your world, sit them down, and share it. Boldly, excitedly, tell your story, what it's done for you. They want to hear it. I was talking 2 weeks ago down in Phoenix, and I heard a doctor share a story. He was on an airplane. And he was a veterinarian. So he was very familiar with animals. And the lady sitting next to him had boots up to her knees, jeans, you know, shirt. And you could just a little faint smell of horse farm. It's very distinct. And he said, oh, do you raise horses? And her first comment was, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't get cleaned up as much as I wanted to. I had to jump on the plane and come. He said, oh, no, so tell me more about your horses. And for the next 3 hours, she talked about her horses, her life, her kids. And was landing the plane, 3 hours later, she's saying, I am so embarrassed. I spent this whole time talking about me. What do you do? And he listened carefully to everything she needed. And he had several solutions. I do this, 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 and this. And he said she grabbed me and pulled his face close to her and said, I need those things. How do I get them? That's a totally different approach. He actually cared to listen. He wasn't wasting time. He was discovering all the needs. And when he found out how critical and important it was so natural to share the solution because she needed the solution. She wanted the solution. When we get rid of our agenda and we understand that our agenda is to connect, drop the walls, then we discover, and only then do we think about what we're going to try to present, because we do not know till then. We think we do, but we let it go till then. That's the magic of intrinsic validation. It makes selling something so free of that icky strategic energy that can be in a conversation. It's all gone. And half the time you get to the point the walls are down and there's nothing you can do to serve them. You just thank them for their time and you got a bridge built to a new friend. But when you find somebody has a need, you can share it. I'm rambling. Agenda. Practice letting go of the agenda, Diana. Because once it's gone, you can speed the whole process up.
Yeah, that's it. I'm thinking too much.
Yeah. Well, when someone starts to learn to play the violin, they're thinking too, you know. Pretty soon it's just a piece of them. Just practice, practice, practice. The biggest challenge for an introvert, Diana, is practicing with enough people. We sometimes limit the number of people we talk to, and we want to get maximum benefit out of every person we talk to. So we inadvertently bring an agenda just because of the sheer lack of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know of what I speak.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. To connect with more people. Great question. Any other questions tonight? Well, that's a great way for us to end. Thanks, everybody, for being with us. For your time, we'll look forward to now. Next week, we're going to take on mental creation and the five constructive ways of thinking. We're going to let go of fantasy, catastrophe, counterfeit forms of mental pleasure. We all spend time in some of those spaces, and we're going to learn to use this enormous gift we have to vividly visualize and how to do it constructively to get an inspired idea that will ignite our passion and drive our focus, discipline, effort, and action. Now, I thought I heard a voice in the background. Does somebody else have a question? Okay, I missed him. Not heard. So, enjoy that.
Listen, Doug.
Yes, Doug. Hi, Doug.
Hi, sorry. I was on mute, on and off. But I just want to say how much it's interesting, having gone through this over a year and a half now, I think it's, I think I read the other day on one of your blogs how, as you were writing your book, you noticed that each chapter you would have some experiences, some of them very difficult, that would help you to better understand what you're writing about and to include it in the book. Is that correct? Did I understand that right? Yeah, and I've had so many of those. I think it's just because I'm more aware, but where I'll have, sometimes it's a pretty tough situation. Like last week, I felt I was being squeezed in every direction on I need to listen more, but I've had many times also where people learn a topic, a subject, a principle will really open up to me. And then the next day, my son will call or I'll meet somebody else, and that's exactly what I should share with them is what I had gone through that week, what I'd learned from it. And it just happens, seems like almost daily. And so I just wanted to share that with you. Thank you. It's been really nice.
You're so welcome. When I was writing, I always knew the next topic I'd be writing about because I would have a very acute experience. And it was like God was saying, David, I need you to be so in tune with the pain associated with this topic so that I can help you know the words to speak. They need to be powerful on this topic. And you've described it at a broader level. And that is that when we're having, remember Og said, I welcome challenges? I welcome challenges. Why would we ever welcome challenges? you just gave us one of the great reasons. This is one of the greatest reasons for welcoming obstacles, because not only are we learning for our own self by welcoming them and learning from that experience, quite often, as you have stated, we are being uniquely prepared for serving someone in the next day or two. So next time you have a big challenge, go, wow, I wonder who I'm going to be meeting and why they need to feel what I'm experiencing right now. That's what you're saying, right, Doug? That's what you're saying, correct?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's how I'm looking at them now.
Yeah. And you find out within a day or two, your son-in-law shows up, and oh my goodness, he needs to understand that very principle. And you understand it at such a deep level because graciously you were reintroduced to it.
Yes.
That's a wonderful way to
yeah.
live. Yeah, a wonderful way to live. Thank you. That's a beautiful place to end tonight. Thank you so much. Joy scroll to this week, everyone. Take it in. Just feel. This scroll is so powerful. If you will practice I love you, if you'll practice the rain and the sun and you'll start drawing on when that happened in your life, you'll see parts of this scroll light up you have never seen before. Some of you, it'll be the very ending of the scroll. Some of you have read this scroll so many times and you have never read, and most of all, I love myself. When I do, I will zealously inspect all things which enter my body, my mind, my soul, and my heart. And then he goes into more detail. It might be the first time you've actually heard it. So let this scroll into your life. That's when it comes alive, when you actually love it. Well, thanks, everybody. Come off of mute and just say goodnight so I can hear your voice.
Amen to that. Good night, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
Bye.
Good night, everyone. Bye-bye.
Night. Thanks, Dave.